Coming up on this week's show, why college football's loss could be soccer's gain, how the Premier League is caught in the middle of a tech versus media giant war, Bleacher Report is back again for soccer rights. We debate if MLS should try to appeal to soccer fans or American sports fans. Who needs Messi more to boost their TV ratings? Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, we've probably got more this week, more news and more listener mailbag to focus on. Not as much from what we've been watching. And I know you've been busy reporting and following the hurricanes, and hopefully all of our listeners in those areas, including Colin Werner, who writes our weekly column about TV ratings. Hopefully everyone's going to be okay and we'll make it through safely. But from this past week, what's been your favorite match that you watched?
Oh, it was definitely the Europa League final. It was a back and forth, and for the third successive match, Sevilla gave up a penalty early. And obviously against Wolves, Jimenez missed a penalty, so Sevilla goes on to win that match. But second successive match, they found themselves a goal down inside of 5 minutes or inside of 6 minutes due to a penalty and a defensive error. And they were able to claw back. And for me, the big takeaway from this match was the tactical noose of Julian Lopetegui, and the analysis Roberto Martinez gave in the CBS studio pre-match about, okay, he's decided to go with Luke de Jong, which is very odd in how it changes the way Sevilla will play, rather than playing nice kind of square balls and on the ground to their number nine, you're going to be playing more aerial balls and more crosses. Well, as it turns out, that was a smart strategy. Lopetegui must have thought of this, because Conte's teams, we know, are kind of inflexible in their 3-5-2, right? So you had your wing backs, Di Gabbandini and Ashley Young, pushed pretty far up the pitch. You have three center backs, but then if you have a target man, you're forcing, you know, those wing backs to defend crosses, and you may be able to get a little more of attacking impetus against the three-man back line. And obviously De Jong scored twice, so great piece of analysis from Roberto Martinez pre-match on that. And then during the match, Drury and Deglin, wow, they were on their A game. I mean, they normally are, but they were so listenable to. So you have a great match with a lot of back and forth, five goals, several other chances, a trophy on the line, major European trophy, and then you have these two, this duo, who are so familiar and comfortable with one another, calling an epic match. I mean, I can't think of anything better. It would be the match of the week any week, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing about Sevilla, is they're such a good side. I mean, they're always so good in the Europa League, and then when I watch them in La Liga, I mean, sometimes they're wonderful, other times they're kind of dull and boring, but overall though too, yeah, I agree with you, Kartik, that was a great game. What I find interesting, and maybe it's me, but with Roberto Martinez, I mean, I hold him on a high pedestal. He's definitely one of the best analysts, and I've always enjoyed listening to him. Of course, too, he's a former Swansea City player and manager, so I've got a soft spot for him there. But what I find interesting is that, and again, maybe it's me, but his accent seems stronger now than what it was in the 2014 World Cup when he was working for ESPN. And I have to listen a lot more closely to Roberto when he's in that studio giving the analysis. And maybe it's because they're in London with their all-European talent there, where the accent seems to be, maybe he's more comfortable. I don't know. For me, it's just a little bit harder to understand him than in previous years. Now I can understand him. I just have to listen in really, really closely. Did you feel the same way, Kartik?
Yeah, I hadn't consciously noticed it until you mentioned it previously on last week's show or 2 weeks ago. But I've noticed it since, and I think when you consider most of the production team is probably British there, and the other studio punditry are British or other European nationalities, it's probably a reflection of that. Whereas when he was working for ESPN, even if some of the other pundits were British, they were American producers, right? So the way you inflect your voice, the way you talk to them might be different. Mm-hmm. Roberto Martinez has spent, I think, more of his adult most of his adult life he spent in the United Kingdom. I want to say he spent more of his life period in the United Kingdom than anywhere else, Spain or now obviously in Belgium. So yeah, he probably has a different level of comfort in terms of how he speaks around British people. And when I say in the United Kingdom, that's between Wales, Scotland, and England. He's been in all three places. But in the UK in general, he spent most of his life.
So my favorite match from this past week was a MLS game. It was Inter Miami against Orlando. Inter Miami got their first win in the history of the club. And it was a really, really kind of back and forth game. Rodolfo Pizarro for Inter Miami had a fantastic game. And it was just really entertaining to watch. It was one of those games that if it was another 5 minutes in this game, Orlando probably would have tied it, and they probably would have gone on to win it. It was just really kind of not your most beautiful game in terms of, kind of defending by any means, a lot of defensive mistakes, but just a real joy to watch. What I thought was interesting for me personally was watching this one on ESPN+, and I wasn't sure what commentary I'd get. Would I get the commentary from the local one from Orlando, or would I get the local one from Miami? I no longer live in the South Florida region, and I ended up getting the one from Orlando, which was for what the rest of the country would have gotten too, except for South Florida. So with South Florida, I missed the debut of Andres Cordero and Ray Hudson, who are doing the commentary for Inter Miami. I did get a chance to watch and listen to some of the commentary on Twitter, the ones that they tweeted out, which was really fun to watch and listen to. But instead, I got the Orlando crew, and not familiar with them at all. But Ali Krieger was on there as a second analyst, so that was interesting. That was different. But yeah, that was my favorite game of the week. I mean, the Sevilla Inter game was top level, no doubt. The Bayern PSG game, Kartik, for me, going into this game, I thought this was going to be a 3-3. I thought this was going to be goals galore. And in hindsight, I should have thought harder about this one. Both teams really kind of cancelled each other out. It was pretty equal for most of the match. And yes, it was open, but there were the pass. I think neither team actually played at their best. The passing was off quite a bit. But pre-match, though, I did enjoy something a little bit different. I mean, we had 90 minutes of coverage from CBS Sports. The thing I thought was interesting, that at first I thought, okay, this is going to be corny, is having the debate. They had a debate where they had three other analysts on one side and three on the other side, and three of them picked PSG as their team. The other three picked Bayern Munich. And then they went through position by position, goalkeepers, defenders, etc., but also experience and other categories, and had to debate, kind of stand up for their team and debate PSG versus Bayern Munich. And I thought that was actually something I haven't seen before. It's pretty basic, the idea. There was a little bit of talking over each other, which wasn't helpful at all. But overall, I thought that was an interesting take. I wouldn't want to see that every single game, but it was different. They tried it, and it ended up being, I think it was a draw, right? As far as, I think, PSG, yeah, the number of votes that they got. Roberto Martinez was the judge. He was the one that would hear the different sides of the debate and then say, okay, the winner for this category is Bayern Munich, whoever it may be. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting take.
Yeah, and Julian Laurens joined CBS for this broadcast, for this pre-game. He was part of that game show format, or whatever you want to call the format that ended up 3-3. So with him and Honigstein, you have a real ESPN FC of the past feel to that pregame and to the postgame. It was good to get someone who had an expertise on PSG, because obviously you had, and who's in London, obviously you had Honigstein, who has an incredible expertise on the Bundesliga in general. Although I should mention Honigstein, a lot of Honigstein's reporting through the years when he was on ESPN FC, when he was on the Guardian podcast, was specifically about Thomas Tuchel. So actually he was well equipped to analyze PSG as well.
Yeah, and overall, I thought that the pregame was pretty good, and postgame pretty good. Nothing, I mean, outstanding, but I think we're starting to get used to the talent and starting getting used to some of the humor that they have and some of the other things. But and the game itself, I mean, I think a lot of the times though too, I mean, throughout the entire tournament, is that if the game's a fantastic game, then the talent feeds off that. And this could be for any broadcaster. If it's a dull game, boring game, nothing much happening, oftentimes the level of analysis is about that same level. But if it's an exciting game, which this was exciting, but it just wasn't a classic, that commentary or that analysis thrives off that. But one of the interesting things that you picked up on, Kartik, and when I watched it, I thought the same thing too, was when they had, right before the kickoff, they said, okay, let's go around the table and let's ask who's going to win this game. And every single person, Roberto Martinez, Micah Richards, Jamie Carragher, and I think Kate Abdo, I'm not sure if she asked herself this one, but every single person said PSG. And when they said that, I was like, wow, I'm shocked. I'm really surprised, like how much credence they're giving to PSG and thinking that they can rise above Bayern Munich in this one. I mean, for me, Kartik, I would have said Bayern Munich. I mean, yes, this is in hindsight, but I would have said Bayern Munich at that moment. When they were doing it, I was like, how could they not vote for Bayern Munich?
Yeah, I thought that was odd. They were putting, after all of their analysis, and maybe Micah Richards prevailed on the rest of them because he was so into the whole star power argument, which is the same argument he gave for Barcelona beating Bayern, by the way, and we know how that turned out. They all kind of bought into that, the Neymar Mbappe thing, not thinking about other factors, and factors that Roberto Martinez in particular has pointed out throughout this kind of mini tournament about how strong Bayern's midfield is in controlling matches. It's a two-man midfield, but it's Goretzka and Thiago, and how they're just able to control the tempo of games, control the possession, control the flow through those two guys. And that didn't necessarily happen in the first half of the match, as it turns out. But then the second half, Thiago, for me, far and away the best player on the pitch. And Goretzka, not that far behind. Him and Kimmich would be the other two that were outstanding. There was, obviously the question mark about Coman starting in front of Perisic, which I thought was meant to negate the pace of PSG and negate the ability of Di Maria to create for Mbappe and Neymar. And as it turns out, none of them mentioned that. Everybody was kind of surprised by the change by Flick, but said, it's because of Perisic playing three games. He's 31, which is true, playing three games in such a rapid succession, which we saw him do, by the way, during the World Cup, and he scored in the World Cup final for Croatia. Those were in rapid succession, but he would have been 29 at the time. Jermaine Genus, who was the co-commentator with Clyde Tilsley for this one, did make the point I made, which he thought probably Coman was there also to negate the width of PSG. So that was a point made by the co-commentator and not made by the studio team, which maybe it's my own personal bias because I had made that same point the second that the team sheet came out, that I thought this is why Flick was doing it. But I was really surprised by their pick of PSG. I don't want to hold that against the studio team because they were great otherwise during this entire tournament. But that was very strange, particularly from Roberto Martinez, because he had spent so much time over the course of the last 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks, however long this mini tournament was, talking about Bayern's strength in the midfield and their ability to control tempo. And then when you push it out to Perisic, and in this case it would be Coman and Gnabry, how that just plays into this entire tempo that they've established under Hansi Flick and the free roll of Muller. So I was kind of shocked by it, honestly.
Yeah, and it might be one of those things, though, too, that it might be their gut said PSG, but their mind said Bayern Munich, and maybe they went with their gut. But that I thought was a little bit odd, a little bit surprising, especially with the debate and it being a draw. I think it was 5-5 in the final score of the debate. And then they went kind of all in on PSG. But other than that, Kartik, it's interesting watching these matches because it's almost surreal. It almost seems normal now. You mean that we're watching games with no fans in the stadium, usually top in the bottom kind of lower tier of the stadium, and with the crowd noise piped in. And it almost feels natural now to watch these games this way. We've been doing it for 4 months. It's pretty consistent, and it's one of those things that the crowd noise, that the way they've done it for the Champions League and the Europa League, I think it was at the right level. It wasn't obnoxious. It wasn't too quiet. It was, you could definitely hear it. But it's one of those things that now, for me at least, when I'm watching games, especially Champions League and Europa League, it just feels natural, which is completely unnatural. It seems really strange to say that. However, when you watch Major League Soccer, as I did this past weekend, and you watch the El Tráfico, LAFC against LA Galaxy, the noise levels and the crowd noise are pumped up so much that it feels fake and fabricated. Of course, all of it's fake and fabricated, but too much so. And I'm not sure if you saw this game, Kartik, but it was very... This was a 6 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. But 3 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on the West Coast. And a lot of people blamed the weather on this game in terms of the heat. But it was a very stop-start game. It was really a lot of fouling, a lot of head injuries, a lot of stoppages, water breaks. I mean, the first half was actually the LA Times called it unwatchable. I didn't think it was that bad, but it wasn't a good look for Major League Soccer. And we'll get to the TV ratings a little bit later. But the one thing I do want to add, though, is that I'm not sure how long John Strong has been doing this in terms of doing commercials in a game. But it sounds so cheap. It sounds so... no offense, Kartik, but it sounds like second division or lower level U.S. soccer. Like, for example, so in this game, every single time an ad appeared on the screen in the bottom left-hand corner, John Strong had to read out, like, for example, MLS on Fox is sponsored by AT&T 5G. And it just sounds like he's a salesperson. It doesn't sound like he's an actual commentator. And I just thought that cheapens the broadcast and makes it look lower level. I understand the reasons for doing things like that, but I just think that overall it was not the type of top-level national broadcast things that I would expect from a broadcast.
Someone who has done a number of I can't even count how many lower division U.S. Games in the U.S. as a commentator or a co-commentator. I've had those reads, someone in my ear forcing those reads, and it is, to be honest with you, I'm not very natural with it either. It's very forced when I've done it in the past, so I can kind of empathize with John Strong on that. He also comes from a lower division background, by the way. He was the Timbers broadcaster when they were in USL. But yeah, I on a national broadcast, especially on a network broadcast over the air Fox, that's kind of cheesy, to be honest with you.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, so this week, this Sunday, we will see on SportsCenter an SC featured presentation of a long form piece by Sam Borden on Gio Reyna. This is part of ESPN's new Bundesliga package and leading into the season with this. I got an opportunity, thanks to ESPN, to preview this piece before it goes live on Sunday morning, and it's outstanding. You learn a lot about the Reyna family, about Gio's relationship with his parents, who were both star players who both played for their respective U.S. teams, men's on the dad's side, women's on the mother's side, and then his relationship with his brother, who passed away tragically. I think most people who are fans of U.S. soccer know about that. And then also importantly for Bundesliga fans and fans of European football, how he ended up in Dortmund, the thoughts of Dortmund's brass about him, and also some of the other Dortmund players. So it's a really cool feature. It's something we don't get a lot on SportsCenter with soccer. And now that ESPN's broadcasting the Bundesliga, maybe this will be more than a one-off. Let's hope so. But definitely worth watching. I would advise the listeners to tune in Sunday morning or set your DVR.
All right, Kartik. So for somebody like myself who the only reason I'll watch ESPN is for soccer coverage. I'm not tuning in for SportsCenter. I mean, it's very rare that I'll see a SportsCenter But how much of a big deal is this for this feature to be on SportsCenter?
It's a really big deal, and this is something that has frustrated me through the years, that ESPN has X amount of soccer broadcasts. Right now it's more than it's been in the last 5 or 6 years, but at one time they had all the leagues and Champions League also, and would be very reluctant. And I understand SportsCenter has a different editorial focus than the broadcast side, the media rights side of ESPN. But to me, it was always very frustrating that they'd show soccer match after soccer match on their network, and then their flagship shows, they would hardly ever speak about the sport, except if there was something notable that happened, you know, like Messi wanting a transfer, right? That's no surprise that they brought Taylor Twellman on SportsCenter on whatever night it was that this happened, or Tuesday night, to break that down. But that they've done, but they have never, the kind of long form human interest stories they do about other sports, they generally have not done about soccer at the same quantity. The only place we would get them were on Outside the Lines, which was hosted by Bob Lee, who was a soccer guy. And since Bob Lee retired from ESPN, it's been even further and farther between. So this is a very, very big deal. I know it's an easier one for them because it is a U.S. player, a U.S. national team player with pedigree, family pedigree. So it may be made for an easier feature for them to put on. But I think it is a big deal. And hopefully, since they've got the Bundesliga rights, they also have the Serie A rights, they will continue to do this and talk about Americans in Europe, if that's the angle, or other human interest stories related to those leagues. Obviously, this week we have apparently the news that Weston McKennie is going to go to Juventus, at least for a season, on loan. So that gives them more impetus to cover Americans in Serie A as well.
Yeah, one more thing about this, too, is that when the Bundesliga and ESPN agreed the deal to move from Fox to go to ESPN Plus for the vast majority of the games for the Bundesliga, one of the reasons they mentioned, one of the things they focused in on, was the ability for ESPN to do features, to do additional programming, to do original programming. And here's a perfect example of that. The season for the Bundesliga doesn't begin until Friday, September 18th. So we're 2 weeks away, or 3 weeks away, from the actual league kicking off. But already this weekend we're seeing SportsCenter, which is a big deal, like you said, Kartik, to have a feature about Giorena and the Bundesliga on a massive, the most popular sports TV show in the United States. So it just shows the level of commitment, and shows how much of a difference it is compared to the previous broadcaster. So first impressions are definitely very positive. So again, we'll have a story. Actually, Kartik, you've written the story. I have to edit it today and publish that at worldsoccertalk.com. That gives also a little additional preview of this week's coverage.
Yeah, so this is just to follow up on your point before we move on. This is an additional reason why ESPN, I think, is going to be favored by European leagues over Fox in the future. If Fox is even interested in these in these leagues anymore, maybe they're not. But it seems to me pretty obvious that Fox will just throw matches on. I mean, and it was the same thing when they had the Premier League, to be honest with you. They had a lot of these original shows broadcast from L.A. on Fox Soccer Channel, but they never built anything into their larger kind of Fox portfolio related to those leagues. And then obviously Bundesliga is in the FS1 and FS2 era, nothing beyond that. And MLS, there's no MLS magazine program or MLS features that are done outside of soccer broadcast windows on FS1 and FS2. So this is a big inducement for leagues to hook up with ESPN. I think that this kind of highlights what the advantages of ESPN beyond just broadcast windows for matches are.
All right, Kartik, in the next news item, it's big news, and we have the exclusive to this one, is that ABC, speaking of ESPN, but ABC, the over-the-air network in the United States, is going to televise two very important UEFA Nations League games in early September. These two games, it's going to be a doubleheader. The first game is Iceland against England, and the second game is Portugal against Croatia. And this is part of ABC and ESPN's major plans for the UEFA competitions. We've got more details at worldsoccertalk.com as far as kind of why this is such an important part of their plans. But a lot of it, too, is to go ahead and promote next summer's coverage of Euro 2020. Even though it'll be 2021 this summer, they're still keeping the Euro 2020 name. And this is a big deal, Kartik. This is a big deal because it's on a typical... It's on a Saturday, I think it's September 5th, on a day typically, Kartik, where you'd have college football. There'd be no room for soccer on US television. But as you know, especially in terms of college football, a lot of the games not being played or scheduled, here's an opportunity for soccer to slide in and perhaps maybe get some big numbers. Do you imagine these games doing well?
They probably will do okay. The England game, particularly England-Iceland, because I think you're talking about a broadcast window which normally would be college football. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 are not playing, and those are conferences that are on ABC that show their matches on ABC. They will not have SEC games on ABC until next year, so they're down to the Big 12 and ACC among leagues that are playing. So this is that apparently will play. I mean, who knows what's going to happen as we actually kick off the college football season. Portugal, Croatia would in theory be a bigger match, right? Because that's the Euro champions and Nations League winners against a World Cup finalist. However, I think Iceland, England, and also the specter of talking about what happened in Euro 2016 will probably get bigger ratings. Now, what will be interesting is if fans find these matches on ABC. It's been so long since there has been a match broadcast on ABC over the air. I want to say World Cup 2014 was the last one.
Oh, was it 2010? I'm not sure. Yeah, it was the England-USA game.
Well, I think the final in 2014 was on
ABC.
Germany-Argentina was on ABC.
Okay.
But I don't think there's been a match on ABC. Euro 2016, they didn't show any matches on ABC. And obviously, they were going to for Euro 2020 and will for Euro 2020 in 2021, as well as maybe, again, MLS will get those matches that they were going to get as part of the lead-in for the Euros or the after the Euros. This hopefully fans will find this. It's been a long time since there was soccer on ABC. Those of us of a certain age, a certain vintage, like you and I, Chris, are used to watching soccer on ABC for years. You saw lots of U.S. men's national team matches, MLS matches, and other matches moved to ABC by ESPN. As time has gone on and ESPN has kind of changed the sports division has changed its focus, and you know, ABC sports division disappeared, right, and was replaced by ESPN on ABC. There have been less and less soccer matches on ABC. In fact, I do not think ABC has broadcast an MLS game since 2008, I want to say. And that was going to change this year, so now maybe it'll change next year.
Yeah, that's one of the things about this, too, is that in 2020, the original plans was for 10 Major League Soccer games to be on ABC this year. And because of the season the way that it is, it's unlikely that maybe a couple of them, maybe later in the season, will be shown on ABC, but nothing planned yet. And this is a way for Iceland and England and Portugal and Croatia to really kind of take a couple of those slots and use them for ABC. What I'm interested in this one, Kartik, is that you got 4 hours of coverage, maybe a little bit more with some post-match or a little bit more of pre-match. But here's an opportunity for ABC and ESPN, really, to see how their coverage is in comparison now that we know that what CBS Sports are capable of. Will ABC, ESPN raise the bar? Will they bring in a surprise guest? Will they do something different with the studio? Will they add some more high-level analysis? That's what I'm interested in, too, as well as the games, of course. I'll watch those. But I'm interested to see how ABC and ESPN, how they will react. Will they do anything different in this broadcast? Because it's a huge opportunity for them. Moving on to the next news item, and that is that if you want to watch the Champions League qualification games and actually also the Europa League qualification games. Many of them will appear on Bleacher Report. So this is a little bit different in previous years. So for this so in previous years, we've had games on, I think we were talking before this podcast, Kartik, you mentioned Fox Sports, like Fox Soccer Channel had some of the games. What was the few
Gold
that you remember?
Gold TV had them, I think, at 1 year when the main tournament was on Fox, and then BN has had playing games, right? Qualifying games as well at various points.
Yeah, and also, yeah, exactly. I think some of them have been on ESPN3 in the past, too. It's like every single summer, they always kind of appear in different different places. Well, this summer, it looks like that not all of them, but many of them will appear on BR Live or on Bleacher Report. And these rights to these individual games are sold on an individual basis. So if Bleacher Report and BR Live, like they did this week, they picked up the Celtic Champions League qualification game, I think, on Wednesday. And then they streamed that for free across BleacherReport.com, the actual website. Celtic unfortunately lost that game, so they're out of the qualification. They're out of the Champions League. But that's just one example. Another example is that Tottenham Hotspur. Spurs are going to have to go through a Europa League qualification process to try to get to the group stage of the Europa League. Well, those games, it looks like they will appear on BR Live also. Nothing officially confirmed yet, but it looks very likely. So on and so forth. So that's the place to check. Also, I mean, worldsoccertalk.com on our TV schedule pages. As soon as we find out details about any of the games, any of the qualification games, we'll put them there. Not every single qualification game is going to be available, but and some of them might be available elsewhere too. It's just one of those things. It's not included in the rights package that, say, CBS Sports would acquire for the Champions League and Europa League. That begins, their coverage begins at the group stage, which begins this year in October. All right, Kartik, one more news item, and this is something that is going to be one to keep an eye on. 2 weeks from now, the Premier League will return for the 2020-21 season, but a major issue is brewing, and that is with Peacock. So with 46% of the games this season exclusive to Peacock, the new streaming service, the cause for concern is that Peacock is still not available on Roku or Amazon Fire TV devices. I don't know about you, Kartik, but I've got a Amazon Fire TV stick and a Roku stick, and there's no Peacock on there. So for a lot of soccer fans, it means that it'll be more difficult to watch games on your smart TV. And what's happening is that Peacock has been in negotiations with Amazon and Roku to get their app on those devices, but agreements have still not been reached. Even HBO Max, who debuted earlier this year, have been unable to get added to the Amazon TV Fire Stick and Roku, and they've been negotiating, trying to get on there since May. So don't forget that the parent company of NBC Sports and Peacock is Comcast Xfinity. So what it comes down to is a standoff between media and tech giants. You've got Comcast against Amazon, Comcast against Roku, and it's we, the consumers. We're the ones that are stuck in the middle of this, because if you're a supporter of a Premier League club and you want to watch one of your games and you want to watch on your TV set, it's more difficult. It's much easier to, if you have the Peacock app on Roku or on Amazon Fire TV or whatever device you use, it's so much easier to do that. Now, if you're a Comcast Xfinity customer, you already have Peacock and it's available for free. So no problem there. But for everyone else, you might have to jump through some hoops. Some of those hoops are, I guess, with the season beginning September 12th, and we don't know the schedule yet. It hasn't been officially confirmed which games will be on Peacock. But a couple of workarounds will be, if it's not available on Roku or Amazon Fire TV stick, or Amazon Fire TV, is that you can watch the games online. So you can watch them on peacocktv.com and then cast those games to your smart TV set if you wanted to with Chromecast or AirPlay. Or you can just watch it on your desktop or browser or phone. So not the perfect solution by any means, but it's one to keep an eye on. And a lot of this comes down to really is Amazon saying like, hey, okay, yeah, Peacock, you want to have your app on our Amazon platform? It's going to cost you. I mean, what can we let's talk money. Let's talk about. You mean it's in Amazon's interest to go ahead and promote Amazon Prime, Amazon Prime Video, a lot of these movies and shows and sports too. Don't forget Amazon's getting into sports big time, is to promote their services where they make more money rather than to say, okay, we'll put Peacock on there and they'll end up making very little money, if any money, from that. So anyway, that's one to keep an eye on. Peacock versus Amazon versus Roku.
Yeah, and you don't have the option of buying NBC Sports Gold anymore to supplement your Premier League package. You're stuck going via Peacock. So Peacock is available to everybody on your iOS devices. So that might be what people have to do if they don't have another option because of Roku and Amazon Fire Stick. So that's unfortunate, not surprising. I mean, if you look at the Peacock library, Chris, a lot of that stuff is competitive with Amazon's Prime Video. They are competing products. So this gets into, I don't want to get too deep into this, but this gets into antitrust issues potentially and whether Congress would look at this, look unfavorably upon Amazon stonewalling. I'm sure Comcast lobbyists are working the phones as we speak on that. Just keep an eye on this. This is fascinating stuff from so many levels.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of mail this week too from listeners, and a couple of people said like, well, why can't just NBC Sports say, you know what, we'll put those games, those Premier League games, on NBC Sports app, and just let them find it there. But the problem with that is that it gives more leverage to Amazon and to Roku. It diminishes NBC's power in the negotiations. And the second thing, it also diminishes Peacock, the value of Peacock. They want everyone to go to Peacock. Peacock is the future of NBC and NBC Sports. That's the direction they're heading in. And also, in some ways, kind of the future of Comcast Xfinity. It's a big deal for them. It's priority number one across Comcast, NBC, NBC Sports, etc. So there's a lot of... I mean, that's the thing, too. You would imagine that HBO, because they're kind of ahead of the pack, HBO Max might get on added on to Amazon or Roku. That hasn't happened yet. But then you've got also the Peacock. So it comes down to money. It comes down to power. It comes down to, like you said, Kartik, some issues. It's a gatekeeper, right? It's Amazon having the Amazon Fire Stick or device is in so many homes in this country. But it's a distribution problem, what it comes down to, is Amazon controls that and says, okay, hey, no Peacock. We're not adding it on there unless whatever the demands are. It almost feels like beIN Sports, Kartik, with beIN Sports saying like, hey, we want to get on added to Comcast. We want to get added to back on DirecTV. And DirecTV and Comcast says, no, it's not going to happen unless you're willing to pay X amount of dollars, whatever that may be. It's a big issue. And so there are ways to get around it, like we've mentioned already. We'll be covering this in more detail. I'm actually working on a Peacock FAQ that answers some of these questions, but goes into a lot of analysis and answers to things like replays, reruns, highlights, what's available, shoulder programming. It's a lot of information. So I've actually been working on this for the last 2 weeks, speaking to NBC Sports. And also doing some research, and I'll have this hopefully on worldsoccertalk.com in the next couple of days or so. But yeah, it's a big issue. All right, moving on to TV ratings, Kartik. We don't have a lot of numbers to go through because there are not a lot of games on television anymore. Speaking of streaming, almost everything is going online. But what we do have is the Champions League final. And this one was on television. It was on CBS Sports Network, but... that one isn't rated by Nielsen, so we don't know what that viewing number was for that game. I'm sure it was large. How large, we don't know. But on the Spanish language side, Univision and TUDN had the broadcast of the game. TUDN doing a simulcast of the Univision broadcast. This one had 2 million viewers. And I'm impressed by that, Kartik. This is a game, PSG, I mean, French champions against Bayern Munich, German champions. Yes, Neymar's involved, so Neymar's definitely a huge factor here. But it wasn't Real Madrid. It wasn't Barcelona.
Yeah.
I mean, this is some big numbers from Univision.
I'm actually shocked by it because I thought maybe PSG has a little bit of a cachet because of Neymar in particular, and obviously some other Latin players, Di Maria, Marquinhos, etc., South American players, I should say. But I was surprised still because it wasn't Real Madrid, it wasn't Barcelona, and Bayern don't necessarily have the most attractive names for a South American or American Latino audience, but they are still a brand name, right? And I think if you talk to most soccer fans, Spanish-speaking soccer fans, Bayern is one of the first five or six clubs they'd mention, right, as giant clubs. PSG may not be on that list. So that those two factors added up, and a Sunday afternoon, right, which is a great time for placement of this. That won't be the case in the future. It'll be on a Saturday, we assume, right? Who knows? This format has intrigued UEFA enough that maybe they're going to tweak it a little bit in terms of the knockout stages going forward. But just a hugely impressive number, a number that blew me away.
So, Kartik, in the past, I'd say probably about 10 years, I've been writing quite a bit. You have at times too, but we've been talking about Major League Soccer TV ratings for about 10 years, and in the last 12 months or so, I've pretty much dropped it because it started to become very repetitive. During the last 10 years, we had pointed out different things as far as areas of improvement, ways that they could increase TV ratings. We've talked about this endlessly on the podcast, about things that they can improve on, things that they should focus on that's going to create a national appetite for Major League Soccer games in this country. And from this past weekend, Kartik, these are probably some of the lowest MLS TV ratings in many, many years. I could have gone back and done the research and compared it and come up with all the numbers, but it's almost hopeless at this point because, I mean, what does that prove? I mean, we know that MLS TV ratings are bad. I think everybody else is catching on to that. In the past week, I'm not sure if you caught it, but The Guardian had a story about MLS TV ratings. I think Yahoo Sports had a big feature. The Athletic had a story too. A lot of them were kind of sourcing World Soccer Talk numbers in terms of their viewpoints and their opinions about what's happening. But this is something we've been talking about for years. So to hone in a little bit closer into this one, so we had the El Tráfico, which is when MLS is looking at the schedule and looking for the return of Major League Soccer after MLS is back. They're looking at the schedule and saying, okay, what games can we schedule that are going to be guaranteed big office numbers? I mean, big viewing numbers. And at the same time, trying to figure out, okay, which teams are located near each other so that in terms of travel, making it as safe as possible. So primetime Fox over the air. Well, prime time is 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. LAFC against LA Galaxy, El Tráfico, one of the biggest games in the season for Major League Soccer. This one on Fox, 376,000 viewers. It was also on Fox Deportes. Fox Deportes didn't do well either, 64,000 people. So adding those two together, it's about 420 or 430,000 people watched this game. That's abysmal. Yeah. I mean, that is absolutely awful.
Now, in fairness, Chris, I should point this out. Not in fairness, this is a real concern. So you mentioned the Orlando-Miami game, which takes place 15 minutes from my house, right? And I did not know that match was going on until I was on Twitter like an hour into the match, right? The El Tráfico, I guess, I vaguely knew was going to be on Fox, but didn't realize it until after the fact, so I didn't watch it. Part of it is my own attitude towards MLS restarting. I was such a fan of the MLS's back tournament, but restarting in the midst of COVID, allowing limited fans based on, quote, local authorities guidance, which I think is a complete cop-out and abdication of any sort of leadership. So maybe there are enough of the people who would normally watch MLS games on national television, myself included, the 10 or 15% that we've seen lobbed off now, or people like me saying, they're playing during COVID, they're playing at odd times, I'm not even going to bother. So that could be a factor in this, because we've we've seen just the diminishing ratings even at the end of the MLS SPAC tournament.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, Kartik, we've looked at the numbers for Europa League games and for Champions League games, and some of these games are not just the final, but the semifinals, the quarterfinals. Some of these other games have been shown. I mean, most of the major games have been shown on CBS Network. We don't have those numbers, but looking at the numbers from the last 2 to 3 weeks, numbers have been good across the board.
Well, no. I'm saying that there's a distaste for MLS specifically during COVID because they've gone ahead and made the decision to play in home venues.
Yeah.
It appeared like they were going in a completely different direction, a very responsible direction, as opposed to Major League Baseball, as opposed to USL. Then they abruptly reversed themselves. Even having the first Dallas Nashville match was the day after the MLS's back final.
But Kartik,
so I think there are enough fans. Maybe it's only 10% of the people who would have watched otherwise, but the numbers are so low to begin with. You lob 10% off that are unhappy with this arrangement, and it looks even worse.
But I think there's a distaste for Major League Soccer even before that, though, Kartik.
No, I'm not denying that. No. I'm saying the reason why there's a cut even from that low number is because of this, is my theory.
Yeah, which is, I'm sure there's definitely people that definitely did not tune in to these broadcasts because of the decision to move on. There's probably some people that tuned in to watch this because they did move on. But, I mean, even though the MLS is back, which was, to me, one of the best things that Major League Soccer has done in the last decade. They did a really, really good job of managing and controlling something that was very difficult to put on an event like this. And those TV numbers were poor. They were averaging about 240,000 people per game. And these games are on primetime ESPN with nothing else on. There was no other sports going on. So it tells me that there's zero interest among... I mean, these are numbers, the same numbers we would get during a regular season, MLS season, when there's basketball on, when there's baseball on, when there's NFL football on. It tells me that there's no interest outside of the hardcore MLS fans beyond that. And now, since then, another number from this past weekend was Portland against Seattle, which is guaranteed always to be a big number. This was on FS1. This was on Sunday night. 158,000 people tuned into that to watch that. I mean, more people would watch, I don't know, Burnley against West Ham or Burnley against Norwich. I mean, no offense to any of those teams. I mean, they've got proud histories, but they don't have a massive fan base. But more people would watch a game like that than they would watch a Cascadia derby on a Sunday night on FS1. Fox is an issue too. I mean, that's something we've talked about in the past. But again, Major League Soccer is not really addressing this. They're, I think, hoping, thinking, looking at these numbers and probably, I don't know if they're throwing up their arms saying, what do we do? I mean, we have the answers. And this leads me into the next question, Kartik, which I'm not sure if there's much of a debate here. But for MLS in the future, should MLS try to appeal to soccer fans or should they try to appeal to American sports fans? What do you think?
I don't think either is working right now. I mean, I think they should try and appeal to soccer fans, but maybe there's too much snobbery among soccer fans, European soccer fans, to truly embrace MLS at any point, in spite of the fact that we give all these theories, if MLS improved their play, if they had pro rel, I don't know that it would ever happen. I think there's just a condescending attitude between among a lot of Europhiles in this country towards anything that's American, even American players when they go to Europe. So that I'm not sure that works. And then the casual sports fan, forget it. We've seen more overtly than in read the recent past, the hostility towards soccer in the mainstream press, in the mainstream sporting press, the last 3 to 4 months. So I don't know. There's no easy answers. I don't know how they get out of this, honestly. And the numbers are, given the level of expansion in the league, the size of the TV markets they've moved into, the ratings right now are probably as bad as they've ever been, if you think about it in that manner. Which is, for a long time when we would bag the ratings, they weren't in big markets like Philadelphia. They had left the Miami market. They weren't in Atlanta. So now they're in all of these – every top 20 market, with the exception of Detroit, I think they're in, and Tampa Bay. Those are the two exceptions in the top 20. And the numbers are not reflective of that, right? So on a national scale, they build no context in – I think maybe that where they really need to do something is they have built no relevance in why non fans of a team, but are fans of another MLS team, would watch a random match. Maybe yeah. that's what they need to address.
Well, that's the biggest problem right there, Kartik. You're absolutely right. Is that why should I watch a Colorado against Real Salt Lake game? What is there of interest to me? How many players do I know on that I can name on both teams? What's the history of those the rivalry between those teams? What's the context? I mean, why should I watch that unless it's a playoff game? What, if it's a playoff game, yeah, it has more importance because, again, the winner of that, it has relevance. I mean, whoever wins that game moves on to the next stage. They'll play Toronto or whoever it may be. But, yeah, there's a long list of issues. I think in many ways, Kartik, this is the worst possible nightmare scenario that MLS would have going into the next TV rights auction, which is going to start next year for the season 2023 onwards, probably to the 2026 World Cup, or maybe perhaps even beyond that. The only saving grace in all of this, and it's been the same saving grace historically, has been that the rights to Major League Soccer have been tied with the U.S. men's national team, and with the morale among supporters at an all-time low for the U.S. men's national team, although there are some promising players coming through the system, so we have some better, brighter hope, it's really down to the U.S. women's national team. The rights to them as a marketable product, in quotation marks, is, I would say, just as great, if not greater, than the men's side of things. That's the future. So with MLS, I mean, combining the rights with U.S. soccer, it elevates that price. It elevates the value of those rights when you have all those three things together. Separate, keep that separate. It's not much. It's not worth much money at all. There's not much demand there. The numbers are poor. There's a lot of things that need to be fixed. There's a lot of issues, massive issues. But we'll get into some of that a little bit later, too, in the listener mailbag with one player in particular. First up in the mailbag is JP. He says, regarding your discussion about the media companies using soccer rights to bring in subscribers to their streaming platforms, I hate this trend. Streaming may be the way our entertainment is going to be delivered, but honestly, now hope the eventual streaming model becomes something more akin to cable. All the options on one service and switching among live content easy as changing a channel. Then the library of on-demand offerings similar to video on demand on cable now. Instead of simply switching from NBCSN to FS1 if following a Premier League and Bundesliga game at the same time, now I may need to exit Peacock, open ESPN Plus, maybe log in, find the match, wait until it loads, and then wait some more. Usually I only have these conflicts with Serie A and La Liga, and I just keep my cable on BN and switch the HDMI input as the way of changing the channel to keep track of them both. But if both were on separate streaming options, or even both on the same, exiting one match to find another is more time consuming and a bit annoying. Don't think I'd watch as much soccer. First world problem, yes, but still an annoyance. I foresee my Bundesliga viewing plummeting this upcoming season. Wish they'd keep matches on linear TV and have the overflow on streaming for free with cable authentication, and the linear TV match available on streaming for the streaming subscribers. This is the most equitable way to handle it.
This is a pretty legitimate concern. I don't know where I come down on it yet, because I have a habit with Bundesliga matches on FS1 and FS2 concurrent to Premier League matches on NBCSN and NBC to be able to just flip within my satellite system, within DirecTV. Now I'm going to have to go off my satellite to go to the Bundesliga match on ESPN Plus and find the match. In theory, I say I'll do it, but it could be very complicated. So I can kind of empathize with this. And then I've also had, as listeners know, and they gave some suggestions. Thank you for that. Some issues even watching the championship and saying, hey, I'm watching Brentford, but I want to watch West Brom. What do I do? Et cetera. I've had that with Serie A at times, too. So it's not as straightforward as you'd like, particularly when you're watching. And I will admit, I will admit, whenever I've had these problems, it's been because I've been watching generally the Premier League or Bundesliga, and Bundesliga will be off linear TV, but Premier League or Bundesliga on linear TV, and I wanted to switch to the Serie A or championship match on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, we're in that in-between stage because we're in between the linear cable world, satellite world, and we're moving towards the streaming world. So if you think about watching soccer on television, how many games are actually on television? How many leagues are on television these days? For the most part, you mean Champions League? I guess it'd be Liga MX. It would be the World Cup. It would be Major League Soccer, partly. The Premier League, and even that too, the next TV deal that comes up in the next couple of years, which is going to be transformative in many ways, you might find that MLS is now going to be mostly streaming. We already have ESPN Plus having most of the games. We've got a Bleacher Report, who's really interested in acquiring rights to Major League Soccer. So it's possible that the majority of MLS games in the next cycle will be on streaming. The Premier League already, right this moment, 46% of those games are exclusive to streaming. It's very likely that the next deal would be even more than that, so greater than 50%, maybe even higher than that. It's quite possible that Amazon might come along and say, hey, we'll gobble up all of, we'll acquire the rights to the Premier League. The place to go to watch the Premier League is going to be on Amazon from 2023 onwards. So that's quite possible, or somebody else. So what we're moving to really is Liga MX, which I think will be kind of one of the last ones on television for a good reason, because that audience really, I mean, those numbers are huge. That's the way that Univision, I mean, in addition to soaps and other programming, that's their cash cow. You look at the World Cup being a TV destination, that's likely to continue too, with some, you know, massive numbers tuning in to watch Fox or Telemundo. So that's about it. I mean, I think so. We're heading towards that streaming only for the most part. And even within Amazon, even within the Amazon Fire, it has a in the navigation at the top. There's one that says I think live TV. And if you go to that, it has all of your live apps in one central area. I read someplace this week that Google is working on something similar too, where they're aggregating all of the different streaming services and apps into one central area so that you don't have to keep on switching. The switch would be a little bit more seamless. I think Apple TV has something similar too. So that's where we're moving to, is to make it as easy as changing the channel like we used to. We're not there yet, and that's why we're in that in-between stage where the technology hasn't caught up yet to make that possible. I think it will happen at some point. How? We're not sure. We'll let the tech companies figure that out. But that's the way things are heading. Next up is Rico Richardson. Rico says, people, you cannot expect everyone in Major League Soccer to be on national TV. There is a reason why some teams are on more than others, because they're a good team or have a large fan base. And just as usual, Kartik, I think almost, I wouldn't say almost everything, but a lot of the things that Rico mentions, I always disagree with, which is good, though, too. It's definitely a good debate. What we see on national television with Major League Soccer is it's not always the good teams. I mean, a lot of the times it's the New York teams. Yeah, the New York Red Bulls are doing better now than they've done for a while. But oftentimes it's NYCFC against, I don't know, LA Galaxy, and LA Galaxy yeah. are doing pretty poorly. I mean, they beat LAFC in the derby last week. But oftentimes, it's the big TV markets that are shown. It's not the good teams. It's not the large fan bases. NYCFC doesn't have a large fan base. I disagree. It's usually the big TV markets. And I mean, if you're San Jose is probably a good example, right, of a team that's a great team to watch, exciting to watch. But they're hardly ever on television.
Yeah, even though they're in one of the largest TV markets in the country, ironically enough, but they just don't have that market penetration right there. They're in a secondary city in that market. The New York City FC has been pretty good the last few years, but they still have not been the elite team in the league. Although I think they were they the number one seed in the Eastern Conference one time, maybe. And obviously the Red Bulls have been have won a couple supporters' shields now. But yeah, they tend to show more big market teams, I think is the bottom line. And that's that's something that I've argued back and forth with people about for years. Now they've kind of tweaked it and they show more Portland and Seattle. But I remember in 2012, I would argue with people that it seems like they show either Red Bull or the Galaxy every week. And if you want people to actually be attracted to MLS, you need some crowd ambiance. You need something that hooks the viewers. And to me, that's Portland. And now maybe Atlanta. Right. Mm-hmm. In terms of atmospheres. And that's what's going to be the differentiator when your football isn't as good as it in Europe, or and your entertainment level isn't as good as other American professional sports. So, yeah, I think that they've made some bad decisions as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. And going back to that TV ratings segment just a moment ago, is that in the past, LAFC against LA Galaxy and Portland against Seattle would have been guaranteed big numbers no matter what. Now that's not holding to be true. So where do you go from here? I mean, to me, I would go for the teams that are playing good, exciting football. You mean a San Jose against a Orlando? You mean a lot of this is this would be post COVID in terms of how things are going to hopefully get back to normal at some point, where you're going to have teams traveling from the West Coast to the East Coast and vice versa, but moving into the future, I would have Major League Soccer look at what are the games that are going to showcase some of the more exciting. It's not always goals, but in terms of just the brand of football, the way that the team plays, as opposed to the method that they've done thus far, which has been looking at the TV markets, looking for the big numbers. Those big numbers have not come in. That strategy has not worked at all. And it's going to take time. I mean, a San Jose against Orlando is not going to be a big box office hit from day one, but those types of teams, those types of games, long term, I think would be more beneficial, because if you can get the hardcore soccer fans, or even just the soccer fans, who might be, I mean, their favorite team might be Juventus or Real Madrid or Barcelona. It's not going to compare to that, but it's going to be pretty close, and it's going to be a fun game to watch rather than NYCFC against LA Galaxy, where it's pretty poor for the most part. No offense, NYCFC, LA Galaxy fans, but it's true. All right, next up is Bill Reese. Bill says, it's unsurprising that no American broadcasters have purchased the rights to the Austrian Bundesliga, but is there any reason why Red Bull Salzburg could not put their games on the Red Bull OTT channel that shows many of the other motorsports and extreme sports that Red Bull sponsors? I imagine this channel is available for streaming around the world, and surely a club that is as successful and cosmopolitan as Salzburg could attract some interest globally. Until then, I'll have to keep up with Jesse Marsh and his boys in the Champions League. And that's a great question. The answer would be that the rights would not be held by Red Bull Salzburg to the Austrian Bundesliga. So it would be held by the league. And the league's probably done a deal with an agency that then is in charge of trying to market that league and trying to sell those rights around the world. And it's a good point too, because Red Bull Salzburg, as we've seen, is just one example of a team that is, up and coming, exciting to watch. But if you want to watch those games, it's very difficult. So, yes, in theory, having even Salzburg games on a Red Bull OTT channel and having it available through there would be fantastic, but we're not there yet. I mean, at some point in the future, perhaps, each individual club would be responsible for selling their own rights to their games. And in some ways, too, I guess we get that with iFollow in the Championship and some of the Football League clubs, where they can go ahead charge a subscription cost or offer it for free if they wanted to, but basically they're in charge of their own rights. But until then, I don't see that happening, but it's definitely a good point. Bill says, I moved this week for a job promotion and my household belongings won't be here until next week. So while I am in an empty apartment on vacation, I've been watching almost 24/7 soccer on CBS All Access from my laptop. I have been an NBC Premier League cheerleader for years, but wow, CBS has nailed it, and they look to be in for the long haul in the States. I watched the Gunners fall today, but was so impressed with a single commentator in the booth. There was one of the Europa League matches this week I watched with a single commentator and really enjoyed it. I understand the shiny, glossy two-man or three-man booth, but this sport is made for one capable commentator to tell us the story of the two teams, history and players, as he or she does the play-by-play. So Kartik, what about you? Like who's some of your favorite solo commentators?
Solo commentators for Euro, Steve Banyard did a lot of these FIFA feeds and UEFA feeds and feeds from various places by himself. So I'd say he would be at the top of the list. John Champion did a number of matches from the Football League as a solo commentator, and we were used to hearing him with a co-commentator, right, with the Premier League. So that would be one. Offhand, I'm sure there are a few others that I could think of if I had more time, but those are the first two that come to mind.
Yeah, for me, it's a good question, actually, or a good kind of point there by Bill, because it is one of those things that oftentimes it tells you the difference between an average commentator and a below average commentator, or even a above average, is how well they do in a solo commentating world. I'd love to hear Ollie White do a solo commentating game, just to hear that, how that sounds. Is he able to work as well within those confinements as he does with a two-man team or a three-man team? For me personally, I think Tony Jones is somebody I really rank highly. Let me think, who else is there out there commentators-wise? Kevin Keatings does a great job. John Champion, you mentioned, as far as when he was doing the championship games, really, really good. And so on and so forth. There's definitely, oftentimes, FA Cup, championship, those types of games oftentimes have that single commentator. Having the three-man commentators, I'm not a fan of that. When you do have a Graeme Lasseau, Lee Dixon, and Ola White, I don't like that strategy. And I do not like having the sideline reporter in the game itself, where he or she is on the sideline giving some analysis or some input. Oftentimes, it's really nothing of value. Oftentimes, it's nothing. It just gets in the way of the broadcast. But yeah, definitely great point there by Bill. And actually, I think Bill, when he asked me too, he said there was one game, I think it was Arsenal, who is that solo commentator? And the answer to that question that he was looking for is Jonathan Pierce, and that's another example of a great voice.
Oh, he's another good one. A very good one.
Totally. David says, using the Apple TV Plus app, most of the soccer channels are collected together, and Apple does a good job at providing the best resolution. No need to be hooking up computers to TVs, nor having to boot up lots of different apps. Everything is much easier to find, for example, CBS All Access via Apple TV Plus, versus the jungle you have to sort through on the CBS app. Switching from CBS to ESPN to BR Live to Peacock is all on one page. Wow, Kartik. I have an Apple TV.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
I hardly ever use it. I should bring it out of the
In fact, it's like, it's the, I use it a lot. And CBS All Access, I've watched exclusively on Apple TV. And I think I may have mentioned that in a previous podcast, but I have not. Yeah. Well, no, actually, I guess I have watched some CBS All Access on my laptop also. But the most of the games, the CBS All Access games, I was watching via Apple TV. For ESPN Plus, as listeners know from the past, from my thing, I watch that exclusively on Apple TV as well.
Yeah.
BR Live, I have not used on Apple TV. Peacock, I suppose I will once the Premier League season starts.
Yeah, and BR Live last week and this week, and I think next week, have all of the Liverpool friendlies, preseason friendlies, and also Tottenham Hotspur friendlies too. So lots of games coming up in the next few days on there. And that goes back to JP's question about changing the channel. It looks like David's found a great way to kind of circumvent that. Next up is Andy Sorensen. Andy asks the big question, Kartik. With Messi's imminent departure from Barcelona, what does this mean for beIN Sports and La Liga in the States?
If Messi moves, which is still an if, I know people are being definitive about it, but these things tend to change. If maybe even the president at Barcelona resigns, it's a devastating blow, right? I mean, I think Ronaldo leaving really kind of decimated the value of La Liga in the United States. They're on VN. They're just now, I think, going to really feel the effect of the bump that Serie A has gotten since COVID. And we reported a lot of those numbers being 130, 140, 150 for random Serie A matches, you know, Sassuolo and Parma, right? Not Juventus and Inter. Mm-hmm. So that's now taking a chunk out of them. Bundesliga is going to get more exposure. It appears on ESPN networks, even if most of those matches are on ESPN Plus. So this is a really tough time for them, I think, from a marketing standpoint abroad. Their teams are being less successful in Europe, with the exception of Sevilla, again, winning Europa League, which is a big thing for La Liga, given the way Barcelona, Atleti, and Real Madrid exited the competition this year, a little earlier than anticipated for all three of those sides. And in Barcelona's case, just an embarrassment. So I think that's a big part of this. BN is in a lot of trouble in terms of their exposure. They're not getting back on cable systems. I know we talked about on this show and articles on World Soccer Talk how easy it is to get them in terms of streaming. But still, if Messi leaves, I'm not sure where La Liga goes in the U.S. in terms of its relevance, in terms of its visibility, and in terms of its media partnerships.
Yeah, the big question for me is, and we've had this question within the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com, is how big is Barcelona? I mean, is, like, for example, Messi, if he does leave Barcelona and joins Manchester City, for example, do the fans of Messi then change clubs and say, hey, I'm no longer supporting Barcelona, I'm moving to Manchester City, I'm going to be supporting them as my team? Or does Barcelona have enough history, brands, connections to keep supporters supporting Barcelona moving forward without that player? I mean, who is bigger? Is it the club or the player? And I think going back to Andy's question, is that what does this mean for BeIN Sports and La Liga? It's more the same. It's more of less chances of distribution on a DirecTV or a Comcast. That's not going to change. This is not going to help anything at all. I think La Liga will just continue beyond BeIN Sports and not available on many channels, and people will continue watching the games, but the numbers might drop a little bit. We're not going to. I guess the big one is El Clasico, right? Just a few years ago, we would have had Ronaldo against Messi, and I mean, those El Clasico numbers are still pretty strong, not as strong as they were with Ronaldo and Messi. So it's more of the same, but maybe a little bit less. Next up is Rob. Rob says, what happens to the NBC ratings if Messi goes to Man City, combined with Pulisic on Chelsea, Liverpool and Manchester United fan bases, Arsenal and Spurs getting good numbers, and Leeds coming in? What would happen if Messi went to Man City, Kartik?
I guess it would help Premier League ratings, although I don't know if there's a ceiling for the Premier League. We'll find out. I guess there will be some La Liga fans that watch, and we also know the Bielsa effect, as mentioned here, will also give the Premier League a few new viewers. There are people who I know in the Argentine community here in South Florida that are planning on watching the Premier League this year because of Leeds, that have not in the past, that have actually been pretty condescending towards the league in the past. It just the style of play and the quality of play when compared to Spain in their minds. That's not my judgment, but their judgments. So, yeah, I guess it'll help. But again, I think there is a ceiling for club soccer ratings, which is why European club soccer, which is why that 2 million for PSG Bayern is so encouraging. Right, we haven't seen a number like that for a European club match in recent memory in the U.S.
Yeah,
in English or Spanish.
Yeah, and it's actually historically speaking, it's the biggest viewing number for a Champions League final. And this was just on Spanish language television. This was not Spanish language plus English language television. But going back to Rob's question, I think in many ways, though, too, with Messi, if he did go to Man City, imagine what the Telemundo numbers are. I mean, Telemundo must be just like licking their lips right now, salivating at the prospect of Messi going to a Man City. If Messi went to, say, PSG, would the Ligue 1 numbers increase considerably? Yes, they would increase. But, I mean, Ligue 1, which we didn't even mention it on last week's podcast, but Ligue 1 has kicked off. It kicked off last Friday. Hasn't had a full schedule. And PSG's of course been busy with the Champions League, but Ligue 1 is practically invisible. I mean, yes, it's actually a really entertaining league to watch. It's just one of those ones that it's trying to keep track and trying to watch as many leagues as possible. Ligue 1 kind of always gets kind of left behind just because there's so much choice. I mean, you can't possibly watch everything, so you have to pick and choose. If you do pick and choose Ligue 1, it's a good league. I don't think even Messi couldn't go into PSG. That would help them in terms of, Champions League, but that's not going to help Ligue 1 in the States as far as viewership. It would help them in terms of maybe the next TV deal, which is probably coming up in a couple of years or so. Maybe getting that on a bigger television station other than being sports. But yeah, if Messi did go to Man City, I see a bump in numbers for NBC. Definitely making it more interesting. I just see a bigger bump for Telemundo, and how long that would last. I think it would win over fans. There'd be fans that would be not into Premier League that would get into the Premier League because of Messi and would follow Man City and then learn more about the other teams. So it's not going to be a negative by any means, but I don't think it's going to be as big as people would imagine it to be. Last but not least, on the listener mailbag, Martin McKilhey has a question. This is a really good question, Kartik. In advance, great and informative podcast as usual. Haha. Quick question. I'm going to buy ESPN Plus subscription when the Bundesliga kicks off in September. Is there any way I can give feedback to ESPN that I am subscribing because of the Bundesliga or soccer coverage in general, as I will check out Serie A and other offerings? Maybe as I sign up, is there a comment box I can make to say that the reason why I'm getting my subscription, or is there a subscriber feedback form to say I have subscription or I subscribe because of the Bundesliga? That's a great question. In many ways, Martin, if you didn't do anything at all, so ESPN is analyzing the data big time. So when you go onto ESPN Plus, they know what you're watching, so they can see, okay, of the people who subscribe to the month of September or August, what percentage of the time are they watching the Bundesliga? There's other programming, yes, there's Serie A, yes, there's other sports and 30 for 30 documentaries, etc. So they will know, even without you doing anything, they will know based on what you're watching, what was the main driver in having you subscribe. But if you do want to do something, there's no subscription, there's no like comments section on ESPN Plus to go ahead. But if you do Google contact ESPN or contact ESPN Plus, they actually have a toll-free 1-800 number you can call. You can always call and say, hey, I just want to share some thoughts and share the reason why I subscribe to ESPN Plus. Thank you so much for having the Bundesliga coverage. And they also have on their website, too, when you do Google contact ESPN, they do have a form on their website. It's kind of a general form. But again, if you wanted to go ahead and share some feedback as far as why you subscribe to ESPN Plus, you can put it in there. They'll definitely get it. They'll definitely read it. They'll definitely take it into consideration. But again, at the end of the day, even if you did nothing, they would know. They would know based on the numbers, and they would see how much value there is in getting the Bundesliga and how many people subscribe to that and what percentage of their time was watching the Bundesliga. But great question, though. Yeah, and I think in many ways, too, I mean, ESPN Plus, yes, they increased the price by a dollar, so it's now $5.99 a month, but still, I don't know. I don't know about you, Kartik, but it's the best bargain out there. I think you can get a cup of coffee or a cup of tea at Starbucks, and it's the same price. And it's gone within 20 minutes. Here, you've got a whole month of soccer from around the world.
Yeah, and they actually noticed the spike when they gained the Serie A rights and mentioned that to us, Chris. So I think it'll be similar with Bundesliga rights, although it may not be quite as pronounced, because I'm guessing most soccer fans have already subscribed, or most soccer fans that are inclined to subscribe. Maybe there are a few that are Bundesliga first who hadn't, but they did notice a spike. And you remember we had a meeting with them in Bristol that specific to Serie A, that they had acquired the Serie A rights, and then they had a bunch of new signups in the next week or two after that.
And that's the thing, though, too. I think a lot of fans, I mean, most of our listeners, I think at this point, have subscribed to ESPN Plus. Not everyone. I know that just from the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com. There's a lot of people who are just like, ah, I'm not giving ESPN a single penny more than what I'm already paying them through cable. But I think in many ways, though, too, is that there's still been a lot of people holding back. And then as they add on one more league and as they add on one more competition, that's the thing that sometimes changes it. They're like, okay, forget about it. I'm definitely subscribing now because not only do I get Serie A and the Championship and the FA Cup, but I also now get the Bundesliga on top of that. So, you mean, in terms of the value for money, it just gets better and better and less of an obstacle. Speaking of ESPN Plus, actually this weekend, this Saturday, is the FA Community Shield between Arsenal and Liverpool. Not a lot of hype or anticipation for this one, unless you're an Arsenal or Liverpool supporter, because I think both of the teams are going to be pretty much a lot of youth playing in these games. I mean, obviously, some of the major players are wanting to kind of take it easy, not get injured before the season starts. But the bigger news, perhaps, is right before the game on Saturday morning, they're going to have, for the first time in 12 years, the Women's Community Shield. And I think it's Chelsea against Man City, and that's at 7:30 Eastern time on ESPN Plus. So that's another added bonus of having ESPN Plus, is you can watch the Women's Community Shield, which I don't think I've ever watched that. And then also following that is going to be a couple hours later, 11:30 Eastern, is going to be Arsenal against Liverpool. So listeners, we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com, and we will read those out on air. And again, this episode too, some great questions, some great feedback, some great opinions, and I think it helps all of us really to kind of get the answers to some of those questions about TV coverage and about you know, feedback, those sorts of things. So keep them coming. All right, Kartik, so don't forget, you can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday on your devices, but also you can get it on Google Home and Alexa. So just tell them to play World Soccer Talk or the World Soccer Talk podcast on Google Home, Alexa, Siri, etc., and that should pull it up that way. And you can also get the podcast, of course, on Spotify, Overcast, TuneIn, iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Pandora, and of course worldsoccertalk.com. And Kartik, heading into another weekend, we've got the second week of Ligue 1, we've got the Community Shields, we've maybe got some MLS games, we've got Liga MX, and I'm sure the Brazilian League, and I'm sure probably a few other things I'm forgetting about, but there's definitely... Oh, Sunday is the final of the UEFA Women's Champions League between Lyon and Wolfsburg. So a lot to look forward to, but what are you going to be doing this weekend, and what should the listeners do?
I'm going to be enjoying my football, and that Lyon-Wolfsburg match is actually first on my agenda. CBS All Access.